online, offline, bottom line. Sendoff.net.
Welcome back, everybody, to Sundog the Podcast. It's the show where we talk about everything related to marketing plus technology. And hopefully by the end of today's show, we'll give you something that you can take away to help improve your company's bottom line. I'm senior editor here at Sundog Studios, Lon Keller, and joining us around the table today, we're going to start with Mr. Jonathan Rademacher. How you doing, John?
Good, good. I head up the technology team here at Sundog and happy to talk a little bit of tablet today with you.
Okay, cool. Let's go around the table. Have you gentlemen introduce yourselves for the folks today.
I'm Chuck Tomonic. I am the team lead for solutions development.
And I'm Paul Bordeaux. I'm the team lead for applications development.
Cool. JR mentioned, we're going to be talking about tablets. A lot of predictions were made last year, which for the most part came true. 2010 definitely became the year of the mobile device, and there's no signs of it slowing down. In fact, it's going to be growing, probably with even more growth in the tablet area. And Paul, let's get your take on that. Is that kind of what you see? You see the trends of tablets becoming more impressive growth than even mobile has been over the last couple of years?
Absolutely. I mean, mobile itself has really exploded. If you look at the cell phone usage from the past year, we've more than quadrupled the smartphone subscription rate that we had in 2009. The next logical step is going to be with tablets. And as we look at some of the new offerings out there between Apple and some of the different Android offerings, Norton has one, RIM has its own. I just see no stop right now in how quickly the tablets are going to be accepted by the public.
Well, we can go down. I mean, there's a whole laundry list of companies now that are jumping on the tablet bandwagon. Apple, obviously. Well, you know what? Apple technically was not first with a tablet PC. We got to go back, 8 years or so when Microsoft first tried it. There were a number of vendors that were playing in that sandbox, including IBM and HP. But it just never did take off. Any speculation as to why it did not work all those years ago?
Yeah, I actually used one of the demo units in a previous life, and it was very much pen based. I think that's the main differentiator. We've gone from pen to finger, mm-hmm. And I think that's been the big differentiator. Using it as you would a mouse versus using it as you would a finger, and really some folks have called it the death of the mouse is coming. Mm-hmm. So that I think that's an interesting debate, but I think no one thought differently, to coin the tagline, but everyone just wanted to apply what they learned about using a computer to a tablet and run from there. And I think the big change is when we changed that input device.
I think that has a lot to do with it. I also think a real big thing that happened was the introduction of true mobile broadband across the United States and across the world, really. I mean, when Microsoft came out with their slates and their tablets, we didn't have this incredible data network that we have right now between 3G, now 4G, and 4G LTE, which are all out there. And that's what really, in my opinion, makes the tablets much more useful as a device, because you have that always-on connectivity. You can always access the different applications through it.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think back at that time, at the same time, I also had a iPad or an iPac. If you remember, nice. from Compaq, right? I had one mm-hmm. of those, and one of the largest challenges was not even so much the input device, but it was that I had to go sync it.
Yep, the syncing back to your desktop was painful back then.
Yeah, there's also been massive hardware improvements. Yeah, we shrunk absolutely. Them down to a size where people can just grab them and go, and you don't need to throw them in a backpack or anything like that. So,
Do you guys see any big issues going forward with compatibility between devices and the ability to share information, let's say directly from device to device instead of going through the cloud? I mean, that's been the dream of owners for quite some time, where, I've got this iPad and I want to be able to, share something with, this guy that's got the Motorola device or whatever. But we're not really seeing that. It's more of a software solution, usually cloud-based, to get information from point A to point B. Do you ever see vendors finally, agreeing on, let's say, a certain set of standards to help bridge those gaps?
I think Go ahead.
Sorry. I was going to say, I don't know that we need to rely on the hardware vendors as much as we do the application developers. Putting all of the information in the cloud kind of alleviates the problem of having to make the devices, you know, compatible with each other, since all they have to do is talk to the internet to pull down the data.
And I think that standard is HTML5. You know, we're kind of app happy right now. Let's get an app. Let's install it. We as people, we like to collect things. We're collectors. We like get all the apps we can have. But I think HTML5 is going to be the big piece where we're actually the browser is the application medium, right? And we're just inputting data and accessing data that way, and that'll allow us to access through the cloud. You know, if we look at the iPad, right? It's just barely a year old, and everybody's just becoming these application hoarders. And I think that that's going to change coming up here because you've got too many applications. You want to start changing that behavior a little bit.
I see that too. In fact, I see a repeat of what we went through 10 years ago when we all had the custom applications that were putting on PCs, and we're developing similar applications for the company to use Macs. And eventually, as an industry, we moved towards web applications because that was more medium friendly. It could be, or medium agnostic, I should say. It could be viewed and used on almost any device. I think we're going to see the same type of thing happening with the tablets here, that we're going to switch over into the mobile web application world a lot more than the actual installed application.
Desktops aren't going away anytime soon. Is it important, in your opinion, that all mobile apps have some sort of a desktop companion app?
I don't think so. I use them for different purposes.
Yeah, I think there's different behaviors. We've talked a lot about what's the difference between a mobile versus a tablet versus a desktop application. In my view, it's not a technical difference. It's actually a proximity and how you use it difference. I mean, Paul's talked a lot about that, how far away you are from your mobile device at any given time.
No more than 10 feet.
And I guess there's some gap in between no more than 10 feet on a mobile, and then maybe if you have a desktop at work, your tablet is, you know, within your proximity much more than your desktop.
That sounds right to me. I mean, I look at how I use my own. My cell phone's always in my pocket or on my nightstand. My tablet's usually, you know, on my desk or in my coat pocket, but it's not necessarily on my person at all times like my phone is. And then my laptop's back at my desk right now. So it's kind of that proximity of the device really dictates how it's going to be used.
Yep. I couldn't agree more. The one thing I will bring up, though, is I don't think it's a bad idea to have, you know, the ability to access the information from the apps on a desktop, on a tablet, and on the mobile. Because sometimes you just want that convenience, you know? Mm-hmm. Like if I'm sitting at my PC, I don't want to have to pull in my pocket and bring out my cell phone to look at something.
So is that bringing us back to the cloud again?
Yeah, I would say so.
I think a great example is Evernote, right? If you look at that, it's they've got a client on each various device, and then it syncs in the cloud, so everything stays synchronized at any given time.
Got mine running right now.
Yep.
Right. Yeah, I was trying to. We were using that quite a bit. We were traveling this week, and I've got it on my Android phone, on the iPad, and also on my laptop, right? And trying to synchronize all those things. It works really well. However, it's a singular view. You can share them out to other people, but the workflow isn't quite there. But I think the idea is that, you know, whatever I do in one device is instantly accessible through any other device that I authorize.
Yep. I think Dropbox is another great example.
Mm-hmm.
How important is it for you folks? I can't really speak to, you know, direct knowledge of how it works in the Android world or the Windows Mobile 7 world. But on the iPad, a general user, unless you try to hack it, I'm assuming, can't get access to, you know, system level files. You can't go see your actual Keynote file that you've created on the iPad. Is that the way you see things going down in the future, where it's just all taken care of in the background, or do you still want to have access to those things?
I think it depends on the device. I mean, we're going to see the Android is much more open and much more accessible than the iPad is, and I think that's by design. You know, if you look back to the Macs versus PCs, it kind of follows the same type of architecture, and I see that happening with the tablets as well.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think every end user wants that kind of access or needs it, but I think the ones that do, I think they should be able to have it in some way, shape, or form. So putting up those huge walls in the long run, I don't see as being advantageous.
Yeah, using my iPad, I just feel it's very, very restrictive. You know, I love my Mac. Mm-hmm. I love my Android phone. My iPad, I run into roadblocks constantly. Simple things like putting in a disability into the tablet so that I can only show keynote presentations or other certain applications on an external display without hacking it. Mm-hmm. Those types of limitations are extremely frustrating and unnecessary, and they seem to be more profit-driven than anything. So mm-hmm. I'm hoping that an increased competition will knock down some of those barriers.
I wrote a review on mine after I had it about a month or so. I posted it on our blog about 9 months or so ago. And I made the comment that I found myself really not needing flash video on it or caring whether or not websites had flash on it or not. In all honesty, I do miss it a little bit. Like you said, there is that little bit of level of frustration there. And it just may intensify the war coming up a little bit more now that Google has officially announced no longer native support for H.264 in Chrome. Mm-hmm. Of course, everyone knows Apple does not support Flash. And I think the reasons for not supporting it are valid. If they're worried about long battery life and, you know, how much it taxes these processors, especially on these, you know, Gen 1 and Gen 2 devices, you know, maybe that'll change down the road as processing becomes more streamlined.
Yeah, I think battery life is key, and the bar's been set very high by Apple. I mean, I use the iPad, and the thing lasts forever. I mean, I've also got a Kindle, which lasts for 3 weeks, but mm-hmm. being able to use an iPad literally for 10 hours, be it video or anything else, is amazing, and that's going to be difficult when we look at some of the honeycomb requirements, right? You know, dual core, all this stuff. It's I'm concerned at how that's going to work. And looking at Apple's approach, I think Flash, part of it was battery life. I think Apple Push Network, part of it's battery life. They're doing all these things to really optimize that experience so you can use it all day. And I think that's great. And then the other balance is going to be openness and flexibility.
I guess my response to that would be then give it an off switch. Right. I mean, if you're really concerned about battery life and you don't need flash, then mm-hmm. you can turn it off. But if you want it, such like I do, I really, really miss flash on my iPad. In mm-hmm. fact, I find myself putting it away and having to drag out my MacBook to look at a lot of the sites. But if you want it, I think it should be there. I mean, I don't think it should be banned. I think they should have an option, just knowing that you're going to lose some of your battery life.
Mm-hmm. I think if we had an off switch, though, the problem we'd run into is that too many people would have the device and not really understand what this does and how to turn it off to get better battery life. Look at the phones in general right now. Everyone should know that if you turn off your GPS or you turn off Bluetooth, you're going to extend the battery life of your phone. Yet mm-hmm. I would be willing to bet that 9 out of 10 people have GPS and Bluetooth turned on, even if they're not using it, because it comes on right by default.
But the flip side of that is how many people are going to these sites and they're coming up just broken and they have no idea why. They just know that the site doesn't work.
Right.
Yeah, I think there needs to be a balance. I think competition will be the leveler of that balance. My mother got a Droid X about 2 weeks ago, right? And it's far more phone than she can really dig into. But she was complaining the battery's only lasting 2 hours, right? Well, I go over there, I look, she's got Bluetooth on, she's got GPS on, and she's listening to audiobooks all day long, right? Mm-hmm. She wants it to work like her iPod does.
Right.
So I think, you know, that evolution of the UI, the evolution of the battery life, and shutting things off dynamically is going to help out a lot.
Now, that user group we've been speaking of here, the ones that, you know, maybe don't get it as readily as the four of us in this room, knowing that we got to shut things off to save battery life. The trend lately has been more and more people are buying these slates, these iPads, the Droid X's. In, you know, when they're making a decision if they need to buy a new computer or not. Do they get a laptop? Do they get a desktop? Do they get an iPad? More and more people have been answering that question, well, we're going to get an iPad. Now we have folks like Chuck and myself that are finding that, well, maybe we are missing flash a little bit and we're reaching for that MacBook. Do you see the pendulum maybe swinging back the other way toward the more traditional laptop, notebooks, whatever, that can handle all these different type of formats, and maybe we're going to be waiting for these slate devices to catch up again for another couple of years?
I actually think we're waiting on the applications that are optimized for the tablet or the websites that are optimized for the tablet. If you look at a lot of the blogs when people have rated their top products of this year, the iPad wasn't number one. A lot of them put the MacBook Air in as number one, which is an amazing device. And it really shows that that's the pinnacle of maturity of a laptop, I think. The tablet is still very, is a very infant device, right? And I think when you go to websites and you're challenged because they give you maybe the mobile edition of the site or they give you the full-blown edition of the site, I think everybody's playing catch-up on actually having a tablet edition, and that's when it's going to become more useful. Flash is a huge issue, but there are ways around that.
Right. I think that's a big key point that you're touching on right there is developing web content or mobile content towards the tablet itself. You know, if I pull out my iPad and I open up an application that was developed for the iPhone, you know, you have your choice of either looking at a really small one or a horribly pixelated larger version of it. There's very few that were actually created for the tablet, and the web pages kind of go the same way. You go there on your iPad, and you're going to be redirected to a mobile site because that's what the browser is telling the server, that this is a mobile device. Well, mobile devices or mobile websites are optimized for that small 500 by 300 display. They're not necessarily made for the iPad's larger display or even the Android tablet's display. So I think that's a important way for us to go.
You know, a big question around that, and it just came up, was when we look at a lot of the argument I hear is that iOS was built for the iPhone, right? And it's just sort of been adapted to the iPad. What I'm hearing a lot from the Google side, the Android side, is that Honeycomb, which is coming up here, is the first one that's really built for a tablet.
Correct.
You know, what are your thoughts on that?
I guess I haven't seen a whole lot from Honeycomb yet. I've seen a few videos and whatnot. It looks very promising. The fact that they designed it for a tablet specifically is kind of exciting because they can make enhancements to the UI for the larger screen that weren't necessarily available on the small phone screens. I think iOS happens to work for tablets in its current state. That's not to say that it couldn't be improved. I think there's a lot of features that were kind of originally pushed out of it, maybe because the phones have smaller processors, less memory, et cetera, stuff like that, that could probably be brought in at some point now. So I think there are improvements that they could make to it to make it more tablet friendly, I guess.
It's kind of interesting. I don't know if you guys were aware of this. Apple designed the iPad first.
Yep.
Yeah, and they saw this device and they said, "Boy, this would make a great phone." So they shelved the iPad for, 3 years or whatever it was, and then they went and made the iPhone. It kind of makes you wonder how things would have progressed if they actually did release this thing first and how far along we may be at this point.
I think we wouldn't be nearly as far along as we are now. The iPhone itself filled a market void, something that was really, we all had smartphones. We heard about the BlackBerry. That was the big thing at the time. People had the iPacks and the old, handheld devices. When the iPhone came along, it really revolutionized the mobile world because here's a computer that worked across the mobile broadband, the mobile data usage, and it completely changed the way we view these things. If the iPad would have come out first, I don't think we would have had anything spurring the mobile carriers' network development the way the iPhone did. And I don't think we'd be nearly as far along as far as the data plans, the data networks as we are now, and the iPad wouldn't be as much of a success.
I agree.
I think the other part is, if you look at when the iPhone first came out, we didn't have an app store really, right?
Right. They pioneered that idea.
And the iPad would be fairly useless without an app store, right? Now they've sort of pushed that out, but I think the evolution has been very interesting, and I don't know where it'd be if we had the tablet first. I think it's taken a large paradigm shift, a mindset shift, in order to actually embrace the tablet, starting with the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk a little bit about what you folks think our clients could benefit from by having these devices. Maybe some stories you're already aware of companies purchasing these things for their employees and for their solutions.
Yeah, we have a client that just purchased several thousand iPads for their sales organization, and I think they're a very progressive company, looking down that road. But it's not a new story. We hear a lot of folks saying that our sales team needs iPads, right? They don't need a laptop. It's difficult. It's cumbersome. It gets in the way of negotiations, etc. They need a tablet interface. A lot of great success stories. I think for certain users, I think a tablet's going to be all they need. Putting everything on a Gen 1 device where it's at right now is going to have some growing pains for folks, but I think it's going to evolve very quickly. I foresee a time when the majority of the folks that we deal with will be running a tablet only and maybe come to their office and dock it so they've got a larger display. But the processing power, the raw processing power of a tablet is enough for most productivity applications. It's not enough for Photoshop. It's not enough for, running other larger scale applications. But for people that do PowerPoint, Word, etc., most of their day, I think it's plenty.
So right now you're saying, when they're saying our employees need this, it's more for the ones that are going out and traveling, but it's not a replacement at this point for their traditional laptop or desktop.
The client,
it's a companion piece.
The client that I mentioned is extremely progressive, so this is a replacement. This is their only device. The only thing they have is the iPad.
So I'm assuming they'll be equipping them with like the Bluetooth keyboard and maybe a couple little peripherals. They can use it more as a traditional computer.
Right. So they've got I'm assuming they've got the docking stations, etc. Mm-hmm. I just know about the size of the order, and also we're working with them on some enhancements just to make them more usable. But that is their only device. We're talking about a sales team that has an office that's at their house, mm-hmm. Nowhere else. They're on the road 80-90% of the time. They're meeting with prospects in their office. So everything that they need to present has to be on them. So it's a unique use case, but I think that they're going to make it so that's the only thing they need. And I think you're going to see that evolution continue to happen.
Mm-hmm. Are there enterprise solutions available for, IT departments will have, ghost images of various machines, and they can deploy them, rapidly across multiple machines at a single time. Is there anything available in the iPad or Slate world that's sort of the equivalent that helps an IT department?
Not on the iPad. I guess you have the doors opened a little bit on some of the Android devices with the idea of custom roots. And I think that I have read some people that are talking about doing that type of application, whether it's Ghost or something else, mm-hmm. so that you can pre-install software and you can get this up to your specifications before it goes out.
Yeah.
I don't see that ever happening with the iPad, just because that is such a closed development model that mm-hmm. I don't think is a good way to do it.
Is this something that Apple or other developers should be offering for businesses, custom configured, custom built to order?
Well, I think Apple would have to allow it first, mm-hmm. And when in my previous life, I worked a lot with both the hardware manufacturers and Microsoft to do custom builds of Windows XP mm-hmm. or Windows 95 for large enterprises to roll it out to thousands of computers. You press a button and you get this build that has the right programs and it works properly. We look at Google, they're doing a device policy manager. They're doing all these things to remotely manage a large collection of tablets or a large collection of mobile devices. We don't see that on the Apple side because it's very consumer focused. Apple is not B2B, and that's maybe changing. I don't know. Maybe they need to do that in order to grow market share, but it's still very much B2C.
Yep. I think. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Chuck.
I was just going to say. I think that'll be an absolute requirement on their side if they're going to try and break into the corporate world. Because right now there's just too many IT departments that aren't okay with just handing over a device to their salespeople and saying, "Here, run wild with it. You can download whatever you want. You can do whatever you want, and don't worry about if your data gets stolen and whatnot." There's just too many concerns there from the IT side, I think.
And I don't know if that's even... I think Apple is still consumer-focused. I don't think they're trying to go for the business route. If you look at Android phones, for instance, versus the iPhone, Android has been surging forward in the market right now, and it's been taking almost all of its customers from RIM. BlackBerry is losing out to Android. iPhone's still increasing its market share. So I think we'll see similar things with the tablet come across. I think the iPad is going to become more of a consumer device. And I think the tablets, because you can have more security and more administrator privileges based on them, I think those are going to become more of an IT device. The Google Apps policy is the first good example. Have the ability to remotely control data across a device. I think the ability to pre-install accounts is going to be the next one. That's what they're talking about with Google right now. So.
And I think it's essential. Even our company, we're a smaller company, but the ability to really manage a device population is key, and you just can't do that in the iOS world yet. So as we look at our market share and looking at having mobile phones and tablets out there that we can properly support, properly assist with, I mean, Android has far more options. We're just playing with the Galaxy Tab. Paul has one of those. Mm-hmm. So the 7-inch tab, a lot of debate on 7-inch versus 10-inch. But I think the big thing is looking at iOS versus Android right now. And I've been using the iPad as much as possible just to get myself into that behavior mode. Everybody here has played with them quite a bit. I am really, really looking forward to, first of all, the Motorola Zoom that's coming out that'll have Honeycomb on it. But I'm just hoping that some of those limitations I've run into on the iPad will start to open up in that space. But I love the competition also.
Absolutely. It just makes it better. You know, you talked about the 7 versus 10, and that was my big issue. And we have an iPad at home, and now we have the tab here too. That was my big issue in choosing the tab, was that I wanted something that was truly handheld. Mm-hmm. And the Android tabs, the smaller tabs are coming out. You see the one by Dell coming out, the Norton Ink is out, all these tablets are coming out, and they're smaller than that 10-inch offering that the iPad has, and there's even rumor about a smaller iPad coming out in the future too. So I wonder if the form factor itself is going to become more along the lines of what we're seeing from the Android tabs too.
Well, I think there's room in the market for both sizes. I mean, I think when mm-hmm. it comes to if you want the larger 10-inch or the smaller 7-inch, I think it really just comes down to personal preference and what you're going to use it for. It's kind of the same way we see with laptops, ranging anywhere from 10 inches to, 17-inch plus size screens.
Absolutely.
So,
and I think we're going to get into a space where we're talking about ranges. I feel like the max for a phone is 4.3 inches. I think it's right. going to stay there.
That's even pretty big too.
Yeah.
It's a large phone, but we get a tablet. Well, the Dell, Streak?
Yep.
Is that, what's that?
That's the 6.5 or 7-inch tablet.
That's a 6.
So that's roughly the size of what you got here, right?
Yep.
You know, I remember the early jokes about when the iPad came out, people were holding it to their ears like a phone. Yep. Well, now you basically got a good-sized paperback up to your head talking to it on a phone.
Paperback's actually the way I describe it, too.
Okay.
I say that the iPad itself, you're holding a magazine, you're holding a periodical, whereas the Android tabs, you're holding a paperback. So it depends on what you want out of that form factor. But mm-hmm. Chuck's exactly right. There is room in the market for both, and Apple's going to have the advantage in that they can actually sell the same device in both sizes and do mm-hmm. it fairly successfully. Android has the fragmented marketplace, so they have lots of different providers or lots of different companies that are making these tabs using the Android OS, and they don't necessarily have a standard across anything. So you're going to see some that are 6.5, some that are 7, a couple that are 8, one that's 10. So I don't know if that's going to be a good thing or not for Android.
The other, I guess another question I've got for the panel here is, the branching around all these devices, using different skins on top of the device, be it, the HTC or Samsung has one, Motorola has Blur that sits on top of it, and we wind up with branching. I've heard that big challenge. It's a big challenge for us as an application development team. How do we do that? What do we work towards? 1.6, 2.1, what interfaces, et cetera? So I guess if we want to talk about that a little bit, and I see that as a strong advantage from Apple. One device, one OS, you build it, it should work for it. If you build an Android app, you've got a lot of fragmentation on who can install it, et cetera, and that pushes you towards maybe a web app.
That was a really big concern when Android came out, and it's something that I know we've talked about internally here before, and I know it's on some of the blogs out there about how are we going to handle the different the fragmentation in the market, how are we going to handle the different carriers. And I thought that was going to be a major deterrent in the Android market when Android first came out, and I have to admit that I was wrong. Android itself, it hasn't been to date that much of a problem. Most of the devices stay with one or two versions of the most current version out there, and that seems to alleviate a lot of the market problems that we would anticipate with applications.
And even on the iOS side, there's a little bit of it, right? When they release new versions, they introduce new things that only work on certain phones, and so you still have to take into account, does our app need to work with the first version of the iPhone? I mean, does it need to go back that far, knowing that that version doesn't have the latest version of iOS and it can't do everything? So,
and I think in the cell phone world, it's easier to do that because, people change out their cell phones every 2 years. That's pretty standard. Yep. You don't see a lot of people that have a 5-year-old cell phone. But as we get into tablets, I don't see that changeover happening as quickly. You know, the tablet's built to last longer than 2 years.
Well, so let's forecast a little bit on that. It's still the tablet's based on you having a data connection.
Correct.
Be it $20 a month, $50 a month, $100 a month, you know, having a new attractive tablet every 2 years, you know, we don't need to upgrade our phones every 2 years, but we do because the new shiny one is out there. Let's forecast a little bit. Is that going to happen in the market space to drive tablet sales?
I don't know if it'll happen as fast. And one reason is because the tablets don't necessarily need that data connection.
Right.
Like my iPad, for example, is Wi-Fi only.
Yep.
And I'm perfectly okay with that.
I think it has more to do with the carrier subsidizing the device.
Yeah.
Which currently they're not.
I mean, if you go buy a new iPhone retail, you're going to spend $600-700.
Yep.
And I think the most expensive one out there now is what, $299?
Yeah.
For the 32 gig model. So, you know, if these, you know, like your Galaxy thing is subsidized by the phone company with their data plan.
And that's the surprising part.
Those things to take
but,
off.
But they are now. They are. And I've seen the Galaxy down to $299.
Yep, okay. Just starting. But you've seen the Galaxy because it's also the older Tab. We haven't seen anything with the Zoom that's going to be a subsidized price. When the Tab first came out, none of the carriers. It was released on all three major carriers, and not a single one subsidized it when it came out. The iPad was similar. We didn't have subsidies for their data plans. So I don't know if that's necessarily the way that the providers are actually going to be going. They're still making their money off the data packages, and I don't think they need to subsidize nearly as much.
I think it's going to be the competition between the providers, and I think that everybody is going to have a data plan on all of their tablets. I just, and maybe I've been traveling more than I typically do, but only having a Wi-Fi iPad is very frustrating. And looking at some of the options with 4G, I see folks switching over to that, and I see carriers pushing back and forth and driving those prices down.
So I guess I want to bring up one question, get your guys' thoughts on Verizon dropping the new every two. How does that going to play into this? Because that is traditionally the thing that drives people to upgrade these devices every 2 years. If they stop doing that, are people going to stop upgrading them? I'm not going to pay $600.
I think it's going to be a market share thing, though, and I foresee that, and that's my little crystal ball, right? I see that coming back. I see the new every two coming back. I'm not sure the motivation around it, but if I'm sick of my phone or it's showing a lot of wear, and I can go over to AT&T, assuming their network gets a little bit beefier, and they give me a brand new phone, right, for the same price, they're going to lose me. They're going to have attrition.
I think what we're going to see, though, and this is what I've heard more from the new every two going away, it's not that they're going to lose the subsidies for phones. It's that they're going to put that power back in the salesperson's hands. It's not going to be necessarily tied to that two-year commitment like we had before. So when you go back into Verizon because you want a new phone, the sales rep is going to have more flexibility and more power to say, well, you know, this is a $600 phone, but I think we can get to you for $300 along those lines. And that's going to try to drive that up. So we're not losing the subsidies. We're just changing the way that we're probably going to get them.
What's going to be one of the bigger drivers then to lure a customer, you know, because of the plans like new every, or because of these plans, you know, Verizon has phones 1, 2, and 3. AT&T has phones 5, 6, and 7. And if a person wants to get a certain phone, they don't have a choice. They got to go with AT&T. They got to go with Verizon. What's going to be the motivation for a customer? Is it just purely price now to get them in the door?
I think so.
I think it's all about data.
Yeah, that's how strong that network is.
It's sad, and I mean the cell networks are data networks now. That's all they are, and whoever can pump the most data through. If we look at 4G and 4G LTE, that's all it's about. If you download an HD movie in 30 seconds or whatever they want to crank it up to, right? That's way.
I want that network.
That's 8G. Yeah. But if you look at the resulting impact on your cell bill, that's a huge difference. And I think to your point, why they're maybe dropping some of the new every two and give themselves some more negotiation is that negotiation room is that when you go in and they look at your plan and they say, hey, Paul, I see you're on a family share. You have two phones, you're averaging $180 a month with us. Therefore I can give you $500. But Paul, you know, if Chuck comes in and we say, Chuck, boy, you're on a plan that was 6 years ago and you're paying $29 a month. It's not even worth me talking to you right now. They look at your total value over 12 months. At least that's the way I think.
I agree. No, I think that's exactly where they're going to go.
And what they want to do is they want to drive up your data utilization and get you on 4G, get you comfortable with downloading movies, downloading music, et cetera, over that device.
Is the dropping of the new every two and similar plans, is that, do you see that really dropping the prices of these devices more rapidly?
No.
I think the device prices are what they are. They're already very aggressive. If you look at the cost of an iPad being $500, that's not very much. I mean, when we were first talking about it 12 months ago, we were thinking they're going to be $1,000 and hoping they get it underneath $1,000. Yep. Mm-hmm. $499 is amazing price.
That was a surprise.
Yep.
Yeah.
One thing that you mentioned before about Verizon having phone 1, 2, and 3 and AT&T having 4, 5, and 6, I actually see us going away from that as well. Couple examples. Well, the iPhone, obviously, is going to be on Verizon and Apple. They're slightly different. One CDMA, one isn't, but it's still the same basic device. You have the Samsung Galaxy series of phones. You know, it's called the Fascinate on Verizon. It's called the, the Vibrant on T-Mobile. And you have the same phone itself existing across multiple carriers. And I think we're going to start to see more of that too, so that the phone developers themselves can work on just getting a good product out and then letting the carriers compete to sell it.
Yeah, if you look at the Galaxy S, they've got over 10 million in the market. It's been a huge, huge success, but they started in the UK and then they pushed them worldwide.
Right.
One company that's been conspicuously absent from our conversation is Microsoft. We touched on them briefly, when they started doing this tablet PC thing about 8 or so years ago. Now they have Windows Mobile 7. Is that the official
name? That's the OS.
Do you see them coming back into play anytime soon?
Paul had his predictions for 2011. Let him start this out.
No, I think the Windows... Their Windows Mobile 7 is a very good operating system, and every phone that I've actually had a chance to pick up and use, and people I've talked to that have the Windows phones, they're amazing devices. They do exactly what they want them to do. There's a different type of use case between the iPhone and the Windows phones. They do different things, and I really think that the Windows phone is going to become more of a player this year. Now, is that going to translate up into the tablet world? For Microsoft's sake, I think it needs to. I think they need to launch back into the tablet world and hopefully make an offering that could compete against the iPad and the Android devices.
Yeah, I think Microsoft, they're the underdog in this. I'm gunning for them. I hope they come through with something. But the only thing I've been impressed with lately is the Xbox 360, right? And if I look at the Windows Phone 7, it's really based on the consumer, kind of building off that same mindset. My only concern is, are they moving away from small business and enterprise at that same
level?
That's
been their rallying cry for a lot of their mobile solutions. But this is great for business.
Yep.
It is, but if you look at the device, they're pushing away from that, and they're integrating your social network, they're integrating Facebook, they're integrating all these things that are traditionally non-business focused. So I'm curious where it's going. I have hopes. I don't know about high hopes, but we'll see.
One of the interesting things about that Windows Mobile commercial blitz that we saw when the phone first came out, it was actually trying to get people to spend less time on their phone and not more time on it, which I thought was a strange way to go, considering the trend right now is people are spending more time on their mobile devices. So I'm not sure exactly how Microsoft is going to parlay that into a tablet success.
The carriers probably don't like it. They want you to suck that data down.
Well, I don't understand that advertising blitz at all, I guess, because I didn't even see why you would be spending less time on this phone versus another one, and especially when they're trying to add in all the subsequent things like Xbox Live. I mean, that attempt alone is meant to just draw people into this phone.
Yep. It didn't show it very well in the advertising blitz, but when you actually use the phone, they made huge strides in the user interface and the data connections between the different accounts and the different networks. Think of it as Modal Blur on steroids. You know, Modal Blur really had a revolutionized some of the mobile interface by connecting everything into one output so you could see it all at once. Microsoft kind of took that idea and jumped on it and made it a little bit better.
So it's basically just trying to cut down on clicks.
Yeah, that's exactly what it's doing, or taps. It's making it easier for you as a user to see all this information.
They've also taken a unique approach. It's very Apple-esque, where it's, one hardware.
Yes.
Yep. Even if you go with a different, if Motorola built it or if somebody else built it, they have to be within the confines of exactly what they put together. Screen size, processor, everything has to be identical.
One thing I remember, when I first started working here at Sundog, this is getting back to the idea of whether or not Microsoft can make an impact, is one of the first things I was told as part of a marketing agency is that everything always comes down to a two-horse race in the end. And you can look at the PC world of Microsoft versus Mac, and right now it's iOS versus Android. Is there actually room for a third competitor to come up? Is that going to work, or are we going to still going to, can Microsoft overtake one of those two? Or is it just going to be Android and iOS in the end?
Well, when we look at cell phones, I think it is. It's always down a two-horse race, right? But it's Nokia, right? It's RIM, it's iOS, it's Android, and it's Microsoft,
right?
And the folks that used to be the big players were Nokia and RIM, and
Nokia is still number one in the world, believe it or not. They have very large followings in India and Southeast Asia out there.
But Android's positioned to take over those, what do they call them, feature phones?
Right.
Right, where it's a specific use phone, and being open source, allowing branching and allowing folks in India to customize it to how they want to use the phone. I have a feeling Nokia's in trouble in that space. But I agree, it's down to two horses, and I feel like Android and iOS are where it's going to be, and it's going to have to be a tremendous showing out of the Microsoft camp to get after that. But I'm curious in that I think the tablet is still the wild, wild west. I mean, I think that if RIM came in and Playbook was amazing, I think it's okay to have a mobile, a tablet, and a desktop be three different OSs and three different manufacturers.
Absolutely.
So I think that's kind of uncharted territory right now. But mobile is we're starting to be able to confidently say who's going to be in the winning circle.
Yep. Well, with that, I think we'll wrap up this show. If anybody has questions for people here at the panel, you can send an email to thepodcast@sundog.net. JR, Chuck, Paul, thanks for joining us today. And we'll catch you next time for another edition of Sundog the Podcast. Goodbye, everybody.